This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Summer is idealized as the easy season where you don't have to work so hard or think too much. And that mindset is definitely at play at the box office, where movies this time of year are about pure entertainment. Sequels are always a reliable go-to this season, whether it's apocalyptic blow-up movies like Independence Day Resurgence, or the gentler kids' film Finding Dory, or the classic Star Trek series, which just opened.
Mr. Sulu, you can fight this thing, right?
You kidding me, sir?
Let's hope this doesn't get messy.
Along with sequels, Hollywood's offering some reboots of old favorites. That list includes Ben-Hur and Ghostbusters. There's also lots of comedies, including some buddy adventures, and a movie about a neglectful dad that gets turned into a cat. Today in The Exchange, bring on the popcorn as we get a little break from this summer's politics and go to the movies. Let's hear from you. What summer movies have you already seen? What do you want to see? And what summer films are you absolutely going to avoid? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Amy Diaz, editor of The Hippo and movie reviewer for The Hippo. Amy, welcome back. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Tom Cook, professor of film studies at Keene State College. Tom worked in the film and television industry for many years. And Tom, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Laura, thanks a lot.
Well, I want to start with you, Amy. Just give us the numbers. How many movies have you seen so far this summer?
It must be, you know, a little more than a couple dozen, maybe close to 30.
Wow. And the summer's just half over.
Yes. Although I would say, you know, summer's kind of front-loaded. So a lot of the big, big summer movies, May and June, they've already happened.
How about you, Tom? How many?
I do movie reviews on local cable access as well. And so we do both what's coming in theaters and for the audience what's coming out on video. So I've probably seen about 50 thus far.
Wow, that's
summer.
A lot of movies and
a lot
of popcorn. So all-time favorite so far, Amy? And then we'll get into different genres and categories and comedy and kids' movies and so forth. But all-time favorite so far.
I think my big favorites of this summer, you know, like for kind of all audiences,
right.
Captain America Civil War, Star Trek Beyond, which just came out, and Ghostbusters. I think those are my big favorites. And then for kids, probably Finding Dory.
Ghostbusters. Okay, because that's gotten kind of, you know, it's hard to reboot an old favorite like that everybody
absolutely.
Loved and not have some people get, you know, grumpy about it. So why are people grumpy about this?
Well, you know, I mean, originally some people were grumpy because they're girl Ghostbusters, you know, and that it was, again, rebooting something from the 80s. I personally, and, you know, this movie I think is kind of shot directly at me. It is women of about my age playing Ghostbusters. Like, it doesn't get more fun than that. And it's some of my favorite actresses, Melissa McCarthy, Kate McKinnon, Kristen Wiig, and Leslie Jones, directed by Paul Feig. Paul Feig and Melissa McCarthy have done some really fun stuff, The Heat, Spy, Bridesmaids. So this was kind of built for me, I think, and I really responded. I really enjoyed it.
Well, and here's where the four women of this all-woman Ghostbuster crew first get their marching orders from their boss.
It will haunt you every night. Whatever it is, no one should have to encounter that kind of evil. Except you girls. I think you can handle it.
Oh, good. Hey. Thanks.
Okay, and everybody knows that classic music from the Ghostbusters movie. How about you, Tom? All-time favorites so far this summer. Just give us a couple.
Thus far, and again, I think with summer you have to check your brain at the door, and you're looking for kind of adventure and escapism. I'll second Captain America. I thought that was a really good look at the superhero genre and lots of excitement. And I chucked my brain completely at the door and really enjoyed The Rock in Central Intelligence.
Okay. Now, just remind us, Central Intelligence. I saw the preview for that.
Right.
And even though in the beginning I thought, okay, this is sort of a, you know, a guy buddy movie and there's a lot of, you know, gunfire and things blowing up. Give us a little preview of that.
The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and Kevin Hart were high school buddies, and Johnson moves on and has changed very much. He was extremely overweight and now is The Rock. And they meet together and have to join forces to stop international terrorism.
Well, and there's a great scene right at the beginning where The Rock is he's the chubby kid in school. Everybody picks on him. There's this horrible scene where this poor little boy is, you know, getting just totally shamed and humiliated. And the other guy is like the only guy in the school who sticks up for him. And then they meet later in life. And you're right. The Rock is amazing. He's a rock.
Yes.
He wears the name. Well, and the other guys become sort of a skinny, nerdy accountant. Of course, he gets pulled into the CIA agent's adventures. Let's hear a little.
I got a plan. Might get us both killed, but if it works, it'll be a totally boss story. Cool?
No. No, it's not cool.
Cool.
No, I said it's not cool.
Okay, so Amy Diaz, when I saw this preview, again, I thought, all right, this is fun, even though it's kind of explosion and, you know, whatever.
Yes, it is explosions. It's not that, you know, thinky, and it's lots of fun. I thought the guys, what made the movie for me was their chemistry.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson have fantastic chemistry, and then Dwayne Johnson does a really good job of playing off his, you know, big, buff, handsome guy, but he can play goofy with that in a way that I really enjoyed watching.
I like what Tom said about, I checked my brain at the door. I mean, is that like, you know, what you have to do for a summer movie?
And I think what you should do, right? Sometimes you should just go and have fun for 2 hours in some air conditioning. And that's, you know, what some of these movies offer.
Right. What do you think, Tom?
I'll agree. Every now and then, and I think Hollywood is very smart, Hollywood is only about the dollar. I learned that and have accepted that. And so the vast majority of them are these big explosions and just go in for an adventure time. But they're smart enough to bring out, and I think we're going to talk about a few of these, a Me Before You or a Swiss Army Man that has a little bit more going on to attract the audience that is kind of tired of blowing up stuff.
Yeah, well, and we'll talk about a couple of those more, not quite Oscar-esque maybe, but maybe that's the movie that, you know, the parents go to while the teenagers go to the Civil War movie and so forth. I did see Me Before You, by the way, and as everybody says, bring your Kleenex.
Absolutely.
But I enjoyed it, so I went with a bunch of women, and it was fun. So, of course, Hollywood loves, you know, explosions and car crashes and gunfights. I mean, that's always some of the fare that they put out there. But why especially in the summer, Tom?
I think it's that the summer tends to be a time when, even though, and I speak for myself, having the summers off, and people with regular jobs don't like to hear that, but it's more of a relaxation time. Certainly the kids are off, and they need something to do. And if you're looking at your demographic, I think the majority of the summer demographic is going to be the teenagers to early 20s who are off from high school and college. And they want to see the escapism. They want to see something that's very different from their own lives. And so that's why we got superheroes and stuff blowing up.
Well, and I heard once, Amy, that the average summer movie is specifically targeted, programmed, you know, pre-thought out towards a 14-year-old boy. That's
the
audience.
That sounds about right when you look at most of the movies that come out during the summer. But, you know, you also think, okay, so if people in Hollywood are thinking about awards season towards the end of the movie, towards the end of the year, this is kind of when you're, you know, again, most of these not going to win Oscars, but this is when your fun movies come out.
We talked about Ghostbusters, how that's a reboot of an old favorite. There's another reboot, Independence Day Resurgence. This is a sequel to the 1996 blockbuster where Earth successfully fights off aliens. And then over the intervening time, people have improved the planet with the alien technology left behind. I love that. Beating the aliens at their own game. Of course, 20 years later, the aliens return bigger and badder than ever. Let's hear a little.
On this day in 1996, the world escaped the clutches of extinction.
Your father was the bravest man I've ever seen.
We all lost someone we love.
But in their sacrifice, we found the technology to build a stronger and safer Earth. Because our survival is only possible when we stand together.
Again, that's a little clip from Independence Day Resurgence. We're talking about summer movies today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. What summer movies have you already seen? Here we are at midsummer. What do you still want to see? And what summer films are you going to absolutely make sure you avoid? Again, you can send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So, Amy, in that clip, Independence Day Resurgence, I mean, what's not to like for a summer movie, right? Aliens, explosions, and a father-son, you know, dynamic. What's going on there?
It should work. Oh, you know, I'm such a huge fan of the first Independence Day. To
really?
Me, it is the gold standard of the cheesy summer movie. It has, you know, your explosions, everything's very over the top. You get the sense that they're not taking it super seriously, and it had a really fun lead in Will Smith. Independence Day Resurgence had none of these things, and I was so disappointed because I was looking forward to a big, cheesy, fun movie. It just didn't come together. It had all these characters, way too many characters, you know, a bunch of people from the original movie, some new people, nobody who could fill the Will Smith spot of being kind of, you know, your central guy who you want to root for, who's a lot of fun. And it just wasn't, it wasn't the good time I was hoping for. It felt kind of ponderous, actually, which is not what that movie should be at all.
Right. Ponderous is not something you would associate with a blow-up summer movie
exactly.
like that. Yeah, and I like what you said. I wonder what you think, too, Tom, about too many characters. You know, maybe you just need to have a couple folks who you fall in love with and you're rooting for the whole time, but 12 is too many.
Sure. I second everything Amy said about that. What I did enjoy, and you mentioned this leading into it, Laura, was the concept that we defeated the aliens earlier, and we've integrated their technology into all of our workings. And there's a lot of real subtle use, if you look in the background, of how we've done that. But I found the rest of Independence Day to be basically just a remake. We're going to talk about, or at least Will Smith is in Suicide Squad. I like to think that he was smart enough to take a look at the Independence Day Resurgence script and say, I want nothing to do with this.
Wow.
But you needed, I mean, if Jeff Goldblum, whom I like a lot, is
I thought
the real,
I saw him in the
yeah,
trailer.
He's in
yeah.
it, if he's the one that we're supposed to go back to and from the original film, not strong enough.
Again, our number for you to join us on summer movies that you've seen or want to see or are going to make sure you don't see, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, exchange at nhpr.org. And first up is Josh in Plymouth. Hi, Josh, you're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Just real quick, I want to say thanks for doing the show today because I really need a break from the Clinton-Trump stuff.
That's what we were thinking, that everybody needs a little break yeah. from politics. So go ahead, Josh.
So, yeah, so I'm kind of a child of the 80s, and the original Ghostbusters is a big deal. And I took my family to see it over the weekend at the Weir's Drive-In, and I just got to say I really think they did a good job. And I thought it was cool having four women roles. They really did good because I have two daughters and they could relate and they just enjoyed it. And
why can't girls be Ghostbusters, right, Josh?
Yeah, yeah. And the PG-13 rating I didn't get either because I had a 7-year-old that went and I thought it was completely appropriate. I think it could have been a PG. But
okay.
Anyway,
Josh, thanks for calling in. Can you talk a little bit, Tom, about, boy, the ratings? I'm glad Josh raised that because that's always sort of controversial and everybody has a different idea.
Sure. I've been a little disappointed in the past decade, and this is, again, me getting older, at how I think the ratings have laxed. And to address the caller's question, in my opinion, I think that Ghostbusters was PG-13 because I thought it was actually pretty scary and tense at moments, particularly at the beginning. My disappointment with Ghostbusters was, because I wasn't crazy about it, was I didn't think it was funny. I thought Davis was by far, I wanted to see more and more of her because she was by far the most comedic aspect of it. And that's what I missed from the original. I'm trying to compare the two. If I'm looking at it exclusively, just Ghostbusters, I thought it was a fine film and the effects were just unbelievable. But as a film, I was a little disappointed in that. Ratings-wise, I think that the ratings board is being much more permissive, and I think society is more accepting of language and violence, unfortunately, in particular. I think it's been pretty lax, and I wish we'd maybe not go back to the McCarthy era, but I think we could be tougher on it.
A little restraint would be welcome on your end. Amy, do you want to jump in?
Well, you know, I think the most confusing rating is PG-13 because that could be anything. I've seen movies that were PG-13 where I'm like, this is so dark. This is, you know, full of violence, full of things I wouldn't want a little kid to see. Or movies like Ghostbusters. I've actually heard other people say the same thing. Why is this PG-13? And so that to me is the most unhelpful rating. You have no idea what you're going to get with a PG-13 movie.
Well, thanks for that call. Let's take another one. This is Ruth in Canterbury. Hi, Ruth. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I wanted to put a plug in for a movie that's probably not going to get a lot of press because it's a documentary, but I saw it at Red River in Concord this week, and that's Musical Strangers. And it's a story about Yo-Yo Ma, the wonderful cellist, and a group of musicians from around the world that he brought together to make music together. And I think in a time when our country and our world are so divided, it's just a refreshing opportunity to see how people can come together using music and learn about differences and make music and harmonize together. And it was really beautiful.
So, Ruth, are you avoiding the summer blockbuster this year?
I'm not a big blockbuster fan anyway, so, you know, I'm not the kind of person who likes to check my brain at the door when I go to the movies. I really like to be inspired and challenged.
Well,
so this was a great one for that.
Thank you so much for calling in. Other sort of thinky movies this summer, Amy, for people who don't like the explosions and car crashes.
Yeah, you know, there have been a couple of movies that I would say maybe are for adults, for grown-ups. There was one that came out in the beginning of the summer called The Nice Guys, and this starred Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling, kind of an L.A. noir 1970s set movie. You know, they're two guys who kind of have to come together to solve a mystery. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, it is still kind of a jokey movie. There are still some car chases, but I think it's car chases for a more mature crowd, for a, you know,
slower car chases.
Exactly. For a smarter crowd, maybe. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
What do you think, Tom?
I'd have to second that one. I thought it was extremely subtle in its scripting, and it appeared, it was like in on Thursday and left on Friday.
Yeah.
Something that when it comes out on video is something I'd certainly encourage the thinking audience to try to take a look at.
There was a movie that I saw a preview for yesterday when I was going through all these movies called Captain Fantastic. And you may think, well, that sounds like a comic book movie, but it's not, Tom.
No. I haven't seen it. I think it was released last month. I'm not quite sure.
I think opens everywhere this week, maybe.
Does it? Okay.
Or soon?
Yeah, it's about a father of five and a family, mother and father, and they have five or six children. They live on this remote Pacific Northwest island, and they raise their kids not connected to civilization on the mainland at all. Then the mother, and this isn't a spoiler alert because, you know, it's in the preview, the mother dies, the dad has to do it alone. How much do you connect with, you know, the rest of the world?
And it goes into a court battle, it looks like.
Yeah, for custody and so on. So that's another thinky one for you, Ruth.
And they are out there. You know, you have to look, but they're out there.
All right. Well, more on summer movies in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about summer movies, sequels, reboots, blockbusters, and more. You can join us. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And of course, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Tom Cook is here, professor of film studies at Keene State College. Tom worked in the film and television industry for many years. Amy Diaz is here, editor of The Hippo and movie reviewer for The Hippo. One more time, the exchange number for you to join us with the movies you have seen or want to see or want to avoid, 1-800-892-6477. And Amy and Tom, speaking of those three genres, you know, reboots, sequels, blockbusters, let's talk about Star Trek, because Amy, it seems to me Star Trek kind of fits in all three of those categories, right?
It is the sequel to the reboot of the Star Trek series.
And it's a summer blockbuster.
And it's a summer blockbuster. And I really enjoyed it. I've really liked the way they've rebooted the series. So it's the original characters, Kirk and Spock and Bones and all of those guys, but played by new actors. And a really smart thing happened in the first movie of the reboot, which allows them to, they don't have to stick to the original storylines. So they can kind of go off and create a new, you know, new adventures. And I thought that's kind of what this was. This was a new adventure for these characters that we really love. And I like the way kind of everyone gets something to do in the movie. You know, they're sort of off in space. There's a point where the crew is separated and they're kind of out in pairs, you know, doing things. And it reminded me very much of the TV show. You know, you're watching a really expensive episode of, you know, a good TV show.
You liked it.
Oh, a lot.
Right. How about you, Tom?
I thought it was loads of fun. I thought Amy alluded to, I thought it captured the kind of off-on-a-lark action-adventure, and it integrated the characters the way the original series did. I'm a Trekkie from long ago. The director, I was a little worried when I went into this because they've been pushing from the director of The Fast and the Furious. And this is a lot of action, and I thought the action was unwatchable. So I was disappointed in the long run as a film, with the exception of it just kind of getting back to the enjoyable time that with all the character interaction. Amy alluded to that they balance. I mean, we're dealing with Kirk and Spock and McCoy and Chekhov and Sulu and Uhura and all of these characters. And much like Captain America did, it's tough to balance all of these different storylines. And I thought Star Trek did a real good job with that one here.
Well, and speaking of the characters, there's been some sadness around these characters, Amy, right? I mean, Leonard Nimoy died. So how do they work that in?
Well, yes. And I guess the character, the actor who plays Chekhov, he died after filming.
Right. A young guy.
And so,
a horrible accident.
Yeah. And from what I've heard, from what I've read, that I don't think they're going to recast him for future movies. I'm not sure about that, but that's what I read somewhere. Leonard Nimoy's death actually is worked into the movie because through a complicated thing, old Spock and new Spock kind of existed in the same universe. And so his death gives some weight to the Spock storyline. And I thought it was really well handled. That's not really a spoiler. Everyone knows that Leonard Nimoy passed away. And, you know, I actually really enjoyed the action. There are two kind of big set piece battles that I thought were really well done. One's actually, I thought, a little heartstring pulling. And one was just a whole lot of fun. And so I really enjoyed those.
Well, speaking of action, we should talk about one more very action-y movie, if I could put it that way, and that's Bourne, Jason Bourne. Here's a little bit from that movie. This is the fifth in the Bourne series. He's a former CIA assassin who now the government wants dead. Bourne has suffered from amnesia. That's why in this clip we're going to hear continual references to remembering.
I know who I am.
When we have finished with you, you'll no longer be yourself.
Everything doesn't mean you know everything.
So a little bit of philosophy there in a summer blockbuster movie. And Amy Diaz, full disclosure, I am not going to see this movie. This is not my genre. I don't like this kind of intense, you know, explosive type of movie. But this has to be popular. I mean, it's the fifth one. It's Matt Damon. Everybody loves him.
Yeah, and he's back. And Paul Greengrass is directing. He's directed two other Bournes. And, you know, the Bourne movies, I have to say, I wasn't a huge fan of the first one. They've kind of grown on me, and I'm looking forward to this one now. I think it comes out this Friday.
Yes.
Tom, you going to see this?
I loved the first one. And
really?
Found the, Damon, I think, is an actor with whom the audience can really identify.
Well, in The Martian, people certainly
felt
that.
And The Martian was wonderful, too. I enjoyed that a lot. Great book, too. I like the action. Greengrass does a real good job as a director, making the action in this particular case identifiable and viewable. And Bourne, for me, particularly Damon's iteration of him, is somebody with whom I can identify. It's much like the new Daniel Craig Bond. I can believe that this is a real person who is doing these things as opposed to some of the other iterations of action-adventure films.
Well, speaking of action-adventure, one more that I should ask you both about. I'll turn to you first, Tom, I think, on this one. Later this summer, there's a Ben-Hur remake. Now, talk about epic. Oh, my goodness. And can we just say that Morgan Freeman rocks those gray dreadlocks? He looks fantastic.
I love Freeman. I would pay to see him stand and read his grocery list. And I don't know. I basically see stuff, and I've seen pretty much everything in the past. If it's opening beyond next week, I don't know a whole lot about it. So I'm just learning about Ben-Hur. But it looks like a huge spectacle that is going to be terrific. One of the things I ask from a remake is either do it better, maybe with new technology and effects, or give me a better storyline. And so I'm hoping that will do it. I love the original Ben-Hur. How can this not be pretty spectacular?
Yeah, spectacle is a good word for it, Amy. Costumes, horses, chariots, you know, lions, Romans. I mean, what else do you need?
Well, and I'm a pretty big fan of your sandal and sword, you know, epics. I really enjoy those. the fact that it's being released in August makes me wonder. So I have a sense that either it could be good or even better. It could be terrible. And I'm really excited. I like a good, especially if they're kind of cheesy or if they're a little on the campy side, a good campy, sandals epic. That can be so much fun.
Sandal and sword. Exactly. I love that. You heard it here first. Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Amy, are you wondering why it's being released in August? Because maybe this would have been Oscar fair and so we'd see it later?
Well, you know, August is a strange time.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
There are a lot of movies that, you know, I think are legitimately, they think they have a good audience for this time. And then there are some movies that I kind of get the sense studios just want you to forget about entirely. And maybe that's why they're buried in August. So who knows what Ben-Hur actually is.
That's true.
Okay, well, I might just go see it to see more of Morgan Freeman reading his grocery list
and his
lines and rocking that hairstyle. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Give us a call. We're talking about summer movies today in The Exchange. Taking a little break from summer politics and going to the movies. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's go back to the phones, and Katie's calling from Durham. Hi, Katie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thank you. I am calling just because I was trying to go out and see, after all of the hype, Swiss Army Man, looking for something fun, but also a little bit more intriguing intellectually. And I couldn't find it anywhere in the area. I'm from the seacoast, but, you know, the closest thing was an hour and a half drive. And so I'm wondering, with independent films like this, are we ever seeing them come back to more popular theaters, or if there are other places to kind of look to see them before, you know, I'm just watching it on my laptop?
You know, Katie, I am so glad you called, because this is part of, I mean, we love living in New Hampshire, mountains, lakes, it's beautiful, but movies sometimes don't come here, or if they come, they stay for 2 days, and by the time you figure out they're here, they're gone. So, Tom, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think one of the things that's difficult for a small market is my local theater, Keene Cinemas, just spent nearly $500,000 renovating everything because the new distribution is not in film, it's digital. And so they had to spend $100,000 a theater renovating each one. And so with that, you've got limited time in the theaters. And so you've got to be real careful about what you pick. And unfortunately, I think, particularly for smaller venues, I had to go to Boston to see Swiss Army Man. And so with smaller areas and more rural areas, you're going to have to really struggle, either go to revival theaters, or I think more and more we're going to see a lot of stuff online, a lot of stuff either distributed originally online or even simultaneously. So I think in many respects over the next decade, we're going to see a lot more distribution in that respect. And so that's going to be easier for people who live maybe in our area to find a greater selection.
I always appreciate it when the local movie theater, you know, occasionally brings back older movies, maybe from 2 years ago or 20 years ago, that I never saw or I really like and I want to see again, because, you know, even though you can watch it on your laptop, it's not the same experience.
Right. I think it's great to be able to go out, and that's part of it, is sharing the communal feel, and comedies in particular, I think. I'll go see a comedy in the theater to review it, but if there's nobody around, it's not as funny, unless the rest of the audience is either screaming because it's scary or laughing because it's funny.
Amy, can you talk about this, too? I know you've thought about this idea that there's all these great movies, and you can't always see them in New Hampshire.
Yeah, you know, you have to work for it, definitely. You know, there are theaters, the Hooks at Cinemagic does occasionally. I think Swiss Army Man was there for a little bit. There are places like Red River or the Music Hall out in Portsmouth where you can catch some of these harder to find movies. And then now some of the kind of more limited release movies are available online at roughly the same time, or on demand, you know, through cable or through other sources. At roughly the same time they're out in theaters. And so, you know, it is interesting. I like that some of these movies are a little more accessible, you know, outside of a big city than they used to be.
Thank you for the comment, Katie. It's a good one. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter. Here's a great email from Ron in Manchester, who says, something that summer movies often get wrong is the villain. X-Men, Apocalypse, and Star Trek Beyond both took superb actors, hid them behind pounds of makeup and prosthetics so that they were unrecognizable, then made their motivation, Ron says, I hate everybody and want to end the world. Yawn, he says. Captain America Civil War, on the other hand, had a villain with complicated yet understandable motivations whose purpose remained mysterious until the end. Ron says the best summer blockbusters have great villains. Darth Vader, Voldemort, Loki, Khan, etc. In a lot of ways, he says, the villains are more interesting to watch than the heroes. Wow, Ron, you've got a future as a film critic.
Totally,
what a good comment.
Ron, yeah. By the way.
No surprise, you've got some smart listeners.
Yeah, what do you think, Amy?
You know, I have to say, I am so bored of I Want to Take Over the World. That is, to me, that is such a... It's the stakes are so high, there's no stakes anymore. And you've seen that in a lot of, especially the superhero movies. I think the less successful ones, definitely X-Men Apocalypse. That was the one where I just, the villain did nothing for me. Whereas the, you've got Professor X and Magneto, and Magneto is sometimes a villain. And he has these very human emotions and motivations. And that's way more interesting for a villain, a conflicted villain, or a villain, you know, who has specific goals. It is so much more fun to watch. It is so much more fun to watch the friends in Captain America Civil War fight each other with their different sides than it is to watch just a big thing smash things. That is not fun anymore. We've seen that so many times.
Well, and Severus Snape, right? I mean, what better villain could you have? Is he a villain? Is he a good guy? We're not really sure. Harry's not really sure. You know, Dumbledore thinks he is. I mean, that's
layers,
great complicated
exactly.
stuff, right? Let's take another call. This is Doug in Westford, Mass. Hi, Doug. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a prediction that the Ben-Hur film in August will be a disaster. I know a friend that's familiar with the storyline, and we had this conversation the other day. He says, the first one won 11 Oscars, and a lot of folks don't know that within Christian colleges, it's also considered one of the greatest Christian films ever made because of its theme. And one of the strengths of that original film is it never shows Jesus. You actually never, ever see Jesus. You see the impression of him, but you never see him. And this film's got lots of Jesuses in it. And I just think trying to remake something that was perfect, in fact, I think it may hold the record for Oscars, I think it's just is a fool's task.
Wow. Super interesting. Thank you so much for calling, Doug. I didn't know about that history of Ben-Hur. So he's right. It's a perilous path. Thank you so much for that call. As we talk about summer movies, we're going to take a quick break. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're reviewing and previewing this summer's movies. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Tell us what movies you want to see, you hope to see, you've already seen, or that you're absolutely not going to see. Tom Cook is with us, professor of film studies at Keene State College, along with Amy Diaz, movie reviewer and editor at The Hippo. And we started off, Amy, with you saying that one of your top three movies of the summer was the kids' movie, Finding Dory. Let's hear a little bit from Finding Dory. This is about, for those of you listening who don't know, and there's probably not a lot of people, this is about a forgetful little blue fish, voiced by Ellen DeGeneres. She's a friend of Nemo from the movie Finding Nemo. And here she is wandering around the ocean as a little baby fish. When she first gets lost, in this clip, she encounters some adult fish who just happen to be in the area.
Hello? Did you hear that?
What was that? Hear what?
Stan, I heard someone say hello.
Yeah, there's a lot of fish here. Anybody, literally anybody could have just said hello.
Hello?
There. Where am I looking?
There.
Oh.
Hi, I'm Dory.
Yeah, well, where are your parents?
Aw, she's so cute. So, Amy, what's so great about Finding Dory?
Well, and, you know, so if you saw Finding Nemo, this is a lot of the same characters plus a few new characters.
And that was a while ago, by the way, Finding Nemo.
Yes, I think about 13, 14 years, something like that. But this was, I thought, a really solid kids movie and a really good kids movie for littler kids. There is a little bit of scariness, I guess, with this little fish, this adorable little fish who can't find her family, turns into Dory, voiced by Ellen DeGeneres, who, by the way, did fantastic. You know, Oscar season comes around. We really do need to start talking about voice acting, getting some awards, because she did great. And it's just a really sweet movie with a fun adventure, which is, I think, what more kids movies need, which is kind of a nice heart, but like lots of fun, adventuresome stuff, lots of silliness. It had all of that.
Adventure, but not too scary. I was telling you during one of the breaks that we took one of my sons to see Finding Nemo years and years and years ago. He was 3 or 4. It was too much for him. There was like a really big, scary shark.
You know, and I kind of feel like a lot of, especially now I have younger children and I'm looking, you know, I took my daughter to see Finding Dory. She's 4. But a lot of kids' movies to me have too much darkness or just too many scary parts for especially littler kids, you know, maybe kids 4 to like 6 or 7.
What about Finding Nemo, Tom? I'm getting mixed up. Yep. Finding Dory.
Right. Well, in some respects, I was a little disappointed in that if we're comparing it to Finding Nemo, which I think you have to do, I thought it was very similar. When you asked Amy what the best thing about Finding Dory was, my immediate response would have been Ellen. She's just so terrific. As anything with Pixar, it's a gorgeous film. One of the things, that since we're getting into a discussion about kids' movies, that I ask for from the producers is at least have there be something there for the adults so we're not spending 2 hours getting people out of purgatory for former Catholics. And there's something to watch. And I thought Dory had enough of that in there. It's great for kids. She's just so terrific. 3D, I'm also usually down on 3D. I'll usually tell my audience or my listeners, don't go to the 3D, save your money. But I thought it was fairly effective in this one. So Dory, I thought, was certainly one that was going to be, I think, box office-wise, it's probably at the top. It was a terrific sequel, kind of.
And point well taken as a parent. The best kids' movies are the ones that have something funny there for the parents. The Incredibles comes to mind. I mean, what an awesome movie for, you know. And there are a couple times in that movie where all the grown-ups are laughing in the theater and the kids aren't. And then, you know, so that's great. Well, you mentioned voice acting, and boy, with the kids' movies, there is some terrific voice acting. I want to talk about another one. This is called The Secret Life of Pets. In this trailer, it just basically sets up what the movie is all about. Right at the beginning, you see this adorable dog, Max, sadly watching as his owner says goodbye to go off to work. Let's hear.
Max, I'll see you tonight.
Ever wonder what your pets think about?
Oh, I miss her so much.
She's back!
Forgot my phone.
Oh, I miss her so much.
What they talk about.
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Again, that's a clip from The Secret Life of Pets. Have you seen... This isn't out yet, Amy, is it?
Yes,
it is. You've seen it. Okay.
I've seen it. And I have to say, I was disappointed. There's not enough of The Secret Life of Pets. And this is another one where I felt like there are parts of it. Kevin Hart plays this, voices this bunny who's kind of very anti-human. And that part to me was a little dark. And there's not enough of a, there's a part where there's sort of a buddy, kind of, again, these, you know, two dogs forced to work each other, kind of buddies on the road, Louis C.K. and Eric Stone Street. And that part wasn't enough fun either. I thought there could have been a lot done with this idea of what a pets do. And there just wasn't enough of that. And I feel like this is one of those movies that piles on too many characters, too many ideas, and doesn't just sort of streamline and tell one good story.
And in the just judging from the little previews that I saw online, the bunny's a little disturbing.
He is a little disturbing. You know, I was looking at this one as one to take, you know, my daughter to. I would say this is not a good one for younger kids. There's a lot of really scary parts in it, you know, scary animals.
All right. Let's take some more calls, hear what our listeners have to think about summer movies. The number 1-800-892-6477. And to Plymouth next. And Jim is on the air. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi there, Laura. I got to tell you that I have been a movie fan forever, ever since I was a little kid. I fell in love with Mary Poppins when I was 5 years old. So I go way back and I enjoy going to the movies. This summer, not so much. There really isn't much out there. We like to see original movies, but, you know, not so much sequels and remakes. But if you look at this summer, if it weren't for those remakes and those sequels, there really wouldn't be much to go see. As you guys mentioned, The Secret Life of Pets, it didn't draw me. A lot of the movies that are out there really aren't that interesting. I mean, the most interesting thing recently was Sing Street or Love and Friendship. And that was about it.
So you're a little tired of more of same.
Well, if it weren't for the Star Trek, which was, I think, an excellent movie, and if it weren't for Captain America, I wouldn't go to the movies at all. I'd stay at home and watch a Red Sox game.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. What do you think, Tom?
Well, I'd stay at home and watch the Cubs game, first of all. But no, he's exactly right. And I've been feeling like a grumpy old man all summer because I haven't liked a lot of stuff. And I think it gets back to the fact that, unfortunately, Hollywood is about one thing, and that's the dollar. And so how are they going to make the most money? You make the most money with a built-in audience, and that's sequels, that's remakes, and that's things like comic books where you've got a sure audience that's going to go into it. And so that's not terribly clever, and it's not going to draw in new audience members.
Well, maybe this is where they make their dollars, and then they can be a little more experimental in the fall.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Amy?
You know, I do. I agree that it's this really, we say this every summer, I think, but this really feels like the summer of sequels. And I don't think that's entirely bad. Some of them are really well done. But I think the thing is you have to have a good world to want people to go into. It has to be, you know, almost like a TV show where you do want to see the next season. You do want to see the next episode. Marvel has done a really good job of building a world where you kind of keep wanting to go back to these characters. But not every sequel does that.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for the call. And Mark is in Portsmouth. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi, Laura. How are you doing today?
Good.
So I actually am at the opposite end of the spectrum as the last caller. I really enjoy world building. I love getting involved in universes, mythologies. I absolutely love, I read every single Star Wars book. I got a little annoyed when they didn't kind of follow that, make sure to that in the movie. I just want to impress that for people like me, things like the Ghostbusters reboot is a little kind of, it makes me worried. I'm not into that. I don't, if they didn't, if they had the original cast come back and hand off the reins to the new cast, that would have been acceptable.
A little more continuity there then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they'd have to pay those guys a lot of money, though, to show up. And I don't know if all of them are alive either.
I heard that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the call, Mark. So, you know, there's something for everybody, I guess, Amy.
Yeah, you know, I think so. And I think what he was saying about world building is really important.
Well, one thing that you said a minute ago, Amy, about the idea of a TV series and, you know, it makes you want to watch the next one. Some people I know no longer say, summer, it's the time to go into the movies and enjoy the air conditioning. They say, summer, it's a time to stay home and binge watch my favorite series on Netflix. And some of the stuff on television now, especially, you know, Netflix and HBO and so forth, is fine writing, fine acting. What do you think? What's the competition out there for summer movies these days?
I definitely think there's a lot. And I agree that especially, you know, different when you get to things like diversity, not just in ethnicity, but also in the ages of people and women, TV is definitely the place where you find that. I do think what I've noticed in the past few years is that theaters seem to be making an effort to improve the experience of going to the movies. You know, I've seen more
cushy seats, better snacks.
Exactly. You know, beer and wine. There's a theater chain that even has a little bar in its theaters. And I just feel like maybe there's a recognition that it has to be at least as good of an experience as you get at home on your couch. You know, there has to be something more when you're going out to the movies.
Well, and to our point before about how sometimes there are amazing movies, but you can't see them in New Hampshire because we're a small state. Tom emails, he says, I want to let your listeners know that the Bellows Falls Opera House in Bellows Falls, Vermont, not far from Keene, shows classic films every Wednesday night and has one of the largest screens in New England. Because Tom is from Vermont, he says it's huge. A little political reference there. Both of you, this has been so much fun. There's a bunch more movies we could talk about. We'll close it out now.